Here we are. We are the pop culture podcast for the Alabama Take, and we're called Taking It Down. I'm the host and editor-in-chief of the site. My name's Blaine Duncan. In this week's episode of Taking It Down, we're going to talk about the Zack Snyder Netflix movie, Army of the Dead, and our final thoughts on the HBO show, Mayor of Easttown. We're also going to chime in on a few summer movies that look appealing to us, so stay tuned for all of that in just a second. But let me introduce my comrades who are back this week. Joining me, as they so often do, it's Adam Morrow, it's Donovan Reinwald, and I'm happy to have both of them back.
Good to be back. Back in the saddle.
Thanks, Blaine. It's a real honor to be here.
Any news? Anybody been watching Dylan and the Dead?
I've had a great morning. It's raining here in North Alabama. A good steady rain. Not always a given in summer. You know, it usually just kind of falls from the sky in buckets and then goes away. It's a good soaker.
You kind of feel like Mickey Hart when Bob Dylan's playing guitar. You just don't know what to expect.
You never know. You never know.
It's 93 degrees here, and I don't have air conditioning.
Oh. That's no bueno for me.
Have you tried Dylan and the Dead? That'll cool you down.
You know, you know how some things are. I think I need to ascend to a higher spiritual plane before I'm ready for that, I guess.
You'd be surprised.
Very often, like, my wife will be like, "Do you want to watch this movie?" And I'll be like, "It's not for me." And she'll be like, "Well, I should watch it anyway." And I sit there the whole time knowing that it's not for me. And at the end of it, she says, "What'd you think?" And I say, "It's not for me."
Give me an example. Give me an example of this movie you're talking about.
Legally Blonde.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
Perfectly fine, not for me. And that's kind of how I feel about The Grateful Dead. Like, it's not
really
that it's bad.
Yeah.
Or anything. It's just, you got to be on a wavelength that I'm not on.
Yet.
Well, yet.
That's what I'm saying. I got to ascend to a higher spirit. When I'm ready, you know, the good Lord is taking his time with me. I'm a work in progress.
So our levels are Donovan and then Blaine and then Adam. And
yeah,
Adam
stair
is,
steps.
Is the one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Donovan, you either have to ascend or descend, I think.
Ascend. I'm just afraid that if I listen to The Grateful, like, it's a gateway drug to fish or something.
It's not. You're safe. Trust me.
I don't know.
Pish? Is that who you're talking about?
Yeah, fish. I was at a party once, and I shit you not, this younger guy comes up to me, and he's like, "Oh, yeah, I like pish." And we said, and we look at him, and my friend and I both go, "Fish? Like, don't you mean fish?" And he goes, yeah, pish. And he just continues.
Blaine, we called that band Pish, me and you, for years, to the point that
Oh, I still do.
Yeah.
Pish. I still do. That's outside of the podcast. That's totally.
That's the easiest way to drive an actual fan. Mm-hmm. Just
slightly, yeah, slightly.
Insane. It bugs them every time. It's great. And I got nothing against Pish, but, you know.
So let's begin. We're sorting through how we feel about the Zack Snyder movie. This one's on Netflix. It's been on Netflix for a few weeks. It's Army of the Dead. So this Snyder film is where he almost or pretty much combines a heist movie, think Ocean's 11, with the zombie genre and the post-apocalyptic genre. This movie is about a group of mercenaries whose goal is to break into a Las Vegas casino after a zombie outbreak in Las Vegas that's been contained. To Las Vegas, but still bad there. Yeah, we'll get into it. I just don't want to spoil anything. I'm trying to think of, is that spoilerific or not? So this 2021 film was written by Zack Snyder, Shay Hatton, and Joby Harold. It stars a lot of people, actually, but a few that really jumped out at me was Dave Bautista, Theo Rossi, Tig Notaro, Garrett Dillahunt, and a lot more. There are plenty more. It's a pretty sprawling cast, some of whom I really didn't know that much, so maybe that's why those names stood out to me. But before we get into anything spoiler, I'll just say a few things, and then I'm going to toss it to my co-host here. So if you would have told me we're going to cover two Zack Snyder movies on this podcast within a few months of one another, I think I would have been surprised. Though, you know, we'll see how the outcome ends up here.
I would have quit.
You would have quit.
I would have quit.
You would not have joined us.
If this was on the syllabus, I would have dropped the course.
Yeah, I actually feel the same way.
But I'm here.
Well, we'll see.
I've done the homework.
We'll see how you guys end up feeling about it. So two of the bigger stories to come out of this movie upon its release, honestly, was beyond reviews, simple reviews and stuff, was the two things. How much it took to sub in Tig Notaro for Chris D'Elia, and the comparisons and contrast between Dave Bautista versus Dwayne The Rock Johnson's careers. And by the way, I'll just say this. I think I'm in full Bautista camp.
He was great.
Why can't I like them both?
You can, but I'm saying it's like the Beatles and Stones argument. I hate it, but then, you know, if you told me to pick, I'll play. I'll play along.
Yeah, you pick the Kinks.
You pick the Kinks.
Is that so, like John, you pick John Cena? Is he the Kinks?
No, Donovan, no. No. Let's get back on course here before we,
that's pretty
before
good.
We brawl.
That's pretty good.
Thanks. It just came to me.
But I sincerely, if I'm going to the movies and only two are playing and one stars Dave Bautista and one stars The Rock, I'm buying my ticket for Dave Bautista.
I like Dave Bautista. He looks good in a pair of glasses.
Exactly.
Just can't get over how good he looks wearing glasses. It's great.
Let's talk more on that.
Well, okay, so in the first time I saw Dave Bautista in glasses was Blade Runner 2049, and I immediately had to exit the theater. So I was glad to see that the glasses, now that I had a couple of years to pray on that, I was glad to see the glasses made a comeback in the comfort of my own home.
Hilarious. No, yeah, so I'm sitting, we all watched this movie right around the same time. I had to do a lot of pausing to take care of some things around the house, but we all watched this around the same time, and I get texts that are like, Dave Bautista can rock a pair of glasses.
He looks so damn good in them. And he's got like that, because like it's like, oh, he's a little older, right? So he's got like his reading glasses around his neck, but he looks like such a badass. It's great.
Yeah, I like it. But going back to the Dwayne Johnson versus Dave Bautista, I think Dave Bautista might be a little better actor.
I would dare Dwayne Johnson to wear a pair of glasses. I would dare him to.
I'm sure he has.
It beats me.
Have you never seen Ballers?
I never have. Was he good in it? Because I've never
seen previews
it.
For Ballers count.
I've seen plenty of
good.
Previews for Ballers.
Ballers used to. I don't remember what show it came on after. What like prestige HBO show?
It was
Game
like
of Thrones
or
something
True
like that.
Game of
Girls.
Thrones.
No, Girls used to come on after Game of Thrones, which was always a very funny, hot cold. Both of these are good, but in totally different ways. But I definitely got suckered into a few episodes of Ballers. I think if we're gonna really talk about this Bautista versus The Rock thing, I feel like the difference is The Rock is now a vehicle unto himself, right? Where like everything kind of revolves around him, whereas Bautista is more in the movie. I guess
so. That's what I'm sensing. I suppose.
That's a good point. He's a part of the ensemble. He's not the quote-unquote star with the capital S.
And I say that both as someone who is married to someone who will watch any Dwayne The Rock Johnson vehicle.
Yeah, my wife will too.
It's going to get watched. And someone who, you know, I don't dislike it as far as popcorn flicks go.
He's a charismatic young man, Mr. Johnson.
He sure is.
I just think Batista's growing on me more than I would have ever imagined.
We're going deep down the Bautista hole.
This is honestly a conversation I wanted to have.
Did you not like Guardians of the Galaxy, or am I mixing you up with someone else, Blaine? Because that was definitely the first time I saw him.
Yes. And I think it might have been one of the few times he was in a movie at that point.
Yeah.
I just remember thinking, when I saw the previews for Guardians of the Galaxy, I remember thinking, wow, that's going to be the first Marvel movie I don't watch in the theater. And then it came around and got good reviews, and I went and watched it. So, yeah, it was fine. I liked Guardians of the Galaxy.
That was the beginning of the Bautista-verse.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But also, he shines there. He's in an ensemble.
Exactly. Let's get into the movie. If you, and again, general, if you're still with us, we're not going to spoil anything until a couple minutes from now. If you wanted a summer movie you could watch at home with awful cover songs throughout, boy, do I have a movie for you.
Terrible cover songs.
Jesus Christ, what was wrong with the song choices in this movie?
The opening number was, one, it was really fun to watch, but like I think that we could have cobbled together a better vocal performance, the three of us, than... So I don't know, I say that, I should have looked into who actually sang it, but it was not great. Fortunately, it was so pleasing to watch the zombie takeover that you kind of just forget about the song.
The obvious, the Viva Las Vegas choice cover.
It was literally more there to just give you beats in the in the filming than anything else.
Yeah.
Because I'm having trouble remembering it.
There's a horrible Doors cover for the end. It was one of those, and it's the classic movie thing where they pick the gentle piano cover of it.
You don't love the Ravenettes classic piano cover of the Doors the end?
Is that who it was?
I had the subtitles on, so that's what it said.
Oh, why did you have the subtitles on?
So I was downstairs in the basement, and another movie was being watched upstairs, and I thought, this is probably going to be, I'm going to have the louder movie, so I'll keep it down a little bit.
How considerate.
There's probably, you know, it's...
What a guy.
The door gets closed, the cat gets trapped down here with me. That's awful. No, I do what I got to do.
All right, so Adam, I'm going to give it to you first. No spoilers, but do you recommend it? Thumbs up? 5 stars? What are we doing here?
I think this is the classic, the other Snyder film that we've discussed that I bitched about a bit. When I pulled this up and it said 2 hours and 28 minutes, I thought, here we go again.
Mm-hmm.
That said, I think it was too long, but... It was, you know, for a Saturday night where I didn't really have, there wasn't much competition entertainment-wise on our Saturday evening, and we pulled it up, and it was a good time. We both enjoyed it. That's as broad strokes as I'll go. I think
that sounds good. Yeah,
there we can get into details. The you know, zombie movies kind of have to decide what they're gonna be. You know, there's like there's only so many things. Like, is it gonna be funny? Is it going to be scary, or is it going to try to make like some societal point? It wasn't funny, despite being, I mean, Las Vegas, it was ripe for comedy. The people, like Natalie said, what if the queen zombie is Celine Dion? How great would that be? It's like, that would have been killer.
Oh, wow.
Just like fun stuff like that, but obviously didn't come to fruition.
Uh-huh. It had some funny beats, but it was not a comedy. You're right.
Funny beats, and I just kept thinking about Bill Murray in Zombieland. Do you have any regrets, Garfield? I couldn't get that out of my head. There were some spooky scenes.
Yeah, I agree.
I thought if I was in the theater, this would have me more tense than it does at home, though it definitely still had my attention. There were some ham-fisted societal commentaries going on, but you know, we can get into that.
And we will.
That's enough for me.
Okay. Donovan, what'd you think? Broad.
I think that I was having fun, and then at some point I realized there was an hour. It stopped being fun, and I realized there was an hour left in the movie. and then I was like, oh, I'm on the roller coaster. And I threw up, but I'm strapped until the end.
That's pretty good.
You know, as so often seems to happen with Snyder, like the whole time I kept watching it, I just thought, did he get his start directing music videos? I couldn't remember, and I didn't look this up. But it feels like that's his media. He can do something that is clever and interesting and fun for 10 minutes. But he has trouble stretching that out over a whole movie, which I think kind of sounds like I'm being a jerk about that. But I think being able to do that kind of thing in 10 minutes is impressive. Mm-hmm. So it had bits and pieces that were cool and fun. But then, you know, when you put them all together, it's somewhat less than the sum of its parts.
I can see that. I think I liked it. I think I was like, if you told me to rate it on stars, 5 stars, I'd give it 2.5 or 3, but simply for pure entertainment. I kept asking myself, if this were solely a theatrical release and there was no pandemic and it was a regular summer, would I go? Would I go see this? And I might. I might have gone. And I might have enjoyed it even, you know?
If it was hot enough, I think I probably would have. You know, it's just a way to do an afternoon matinee, get away in the air conditioning. I did find myself thinking I would have probably liked this better on the big screen.
I think so too.
Especially because, you know, it's not like an hour and a half into that movie was what it was. It's not that I was like, wait a minute, this isn't intellectually stimulating. No, it was more like at that moment I just was like, I'm getting bored. Yeah. I'm not interested in this.
It did look really cool, though.
And then the creakiness starts to show.
It did look cool, as Adam just said. And the 2 hours and 30 minutes in a theater doesn't feel like 2 hours and 30 minutes.
It's a different environment.
It's a totally different environment. But 2 hours and 30 minutes in your home can. And I think I was benefited by something I mentioned earlier. I had to pause it a couple of times for food and things like that. And those pauses became prolonged. So I kind of watched it in almost in natural act break segments. And I think I enjoyed it. I was not disappointed.
I'm glad really I watched it. It really moved for a while there. Like, yeah, it really moved when it started out, and then I think it didn't move quite as much.
And I know that Tig Notaro was added in post-production because of the controversy surrounding Chris D'Elia. I think that's his name. I would have loved to have seen more of her. Loved to have seen much more. So let's get into spoilers. And if you haven't seen it and you just want to go by what we said, have at it. So let's dive in. Let's talk specifics.
The scene setting was very good. Literal scene setting. The dropping of the shipping container on the last people trying to get out. The setup of Vegas as this wasteland. All of that was super fun. And we talked about it looking good. So it's a good stage that he set. And I think when they actually made it in to discover that all of the what did they call the normal zombies?
The alphas. Oh, no, sorry. It was like shamblers and then alphas.
Shambler.
Yeah.
The discovery that there is a whole like hyper-intelligent, hyper-athletic breed of zombie was... Well, saying that out loud makes it sound really dumb, but it really worked in the movie for me. Their whole... Whatever they had going on was explained just enough to keep it creepy and mysterious and fun. You know, your imagination got to run a little bit with what they were up to, and I thought that was really strong and gave it a good structure for moving the chess pieces around the board, right? Instead of just like a sprint with guns and a saw towards their destination.
I really appreciated the layers of creativity he did with this particular brand of zombie. I would have liked a couple of clearer definitions on what they could and couldn't do.
They were pretty, it was pretty unclear a couple times, including with like the hilariously tacked on ending, right? Like you've got zombie bites turning people into zombies in minutes, and then you've got a guy who made it almost to Mexico City.
Now he's
zombifying.
I mean, Bautista got to have a nice final conversation.
That's what I'm saying, yeah. But he was still, you know, that was what, like 15, 20 minutes, if that.
Right. Yeah, right. And the old dude had gotten a pretty sizable chunk of his arm taken off to have not noticed. That was...
I was going to say, you're just now seeing this?
Yeah. I know he's been through it, but he wandered the desert and drove into a town and... Yeah, that was maybe a little problematic.
My arm sure is sore.
once the king zombie showed up on that rooftop, I was like, oh, we're in like a contamination movie, you know?
Yeah.
Like I wasn't when as soon as the super spoiler turf here, I guess. Once the door closed on the vault. You know, you kind of realize, and Natalie pointed out to me, is like, oh, he's going to survive the nuclear blast for sure.
Yeah.
And come out with all the money.
Yeah. Yeah.
The idea that he doesn't just get to then split the cash up with everybody else, that their greed has somehow caused the problem to proliferate. They're fighting on the helicopter, and you're realizing, oh, if that thing falls out, then there's a whole other problem, and... Yeah, that's kind of where it got into the ham-fisted, both political and, like, human drama side of things.
I think I respect that he didn't try to push the greed is going to what's ending this group and the greed ends humanity kind of thing. He didn't push that theme, or did he? Did I just not watch carefully enough?
It's sort of in there.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It didn't come down to... I kept thinking it was going to be Double Cross at the end. I kept thinking he was going to try to combine that with a zombie movie where, you know, you find out so-and-so double-crossed this person, and then a bunch of those reveals would keep happening, and I was not in the mood for that in this kind of genre.
Interesting, because I actually thought, I kind of wish he had stuck, like, heist is a fun format, you kind of know what you're getting, and I kind of found myself wishing he had stuck closer to that, because the movie as it was felt oftentimes oddly meandering. The Zom society, if you will, that's zombie society.
Meant
very little to me. I would have been, they're in here, they're trying to figure them out, that's fine. But I don't know if I really needed or cared about the peek behind the curtains. I don't care.
Really? Yeah, well, it did take away from the mystery.
It takes away from the momentum. It takes, you know, and it's like, it's like if we had a big chunk in the middle of Aliens where it's like, and here's how the queen relates to its children.
Yeah, and he did a half measure with it. He should have done one or the other. He should have kept them mysterious and dark, or he should have gone full throttle, because we get the point where the zombie king pulls the little baby, and then that's it. You know, that's plot is gone.
What is the implication there, by the way, that they're learning to reproduce in some other way? Is this like a big deal? Yeah. Is this supposed to be like a breakthrough moment? Like, create a society?
Also to offer motivation for him to really want revenge.
It kind of reminded me of a plot point from The Girl with All the Gifts, if you have read or seen that.
I
almost wonder if it was pulled from that, which is also a zombie story.
That's not one of the books of the passage, is it?
I don't think so.
So, the whole hibernation thing, that felt sudden. Like, oh, they hibernate? Why, you know, why?
I was, like, you know, kind of willing to give it, like, they can do whatever they need to do for the scene, right? Which was actually probably my favorite. One of my favorite set
earlier
pieces.
When I said if I had seen this in the theater, I would have been fairly tense. That's the scene that I was thinking of, for sure.
That was absolutely it. That one was very fun. Beginning to end of the hibernation bit.
It did conflict a bit with when they walk in and discover, I thought the tension and release of them opening the doors for the first time onto the world of Las Vegas and finding that the zombie horde has just stood in the sun too long. And they've all, you know, if it rains, they come back to life or something. I didn't follow all that logic, but it was...
I thought that was Chekhov's rain there.
Yeah, it kind of undercut. Yeah, it's like, surely it's going to rain before the stage
is
over.
Yeah, nothing, but.
Yeah, I thought it was a bit, to change the rules that these zombies were so stupid that they stood out in the sun, yet you have some that have sought shelter in this basement or whatever to stay alive. I didn't really follow all that, but it worked for scariness.
It sort of seemed like at least the dumb ones, like they were just stuck wherever they were. So if they were outside, they didn't know to go inside. But if they were stuck inside, well, they were stuck inside.
Yeah.
Yeah. You guys have thoughts on the zombie tiger or zombie horse?
I thought the...
I actually do.
The zombie tiger was pretty good. And it ties in a bit. I'll back up to a point you were making about the double cross and the kind of some of the more traditional heist things. When... Old fella, the untrustworthy guy. I'm forgetting his name.
It was Garrett Dillett Hunt's character, Martin.
Yeah. Officer Bad Boy.
Officer Bad Boy. When Shady...
Oh, wait, was it the officer or was it the guy who worked for the casino mogul?
The guy who worked for the casino, yeah.
Officer Bad Boy.
Shady McShade. Yeah.
Yeah, Garrett Dillett Hunt's character. I love Garrett Dillett Hunt as an actor, by the way.
There are many heist movies where he would have... Our good guys would have made it to the end, and he also would have made it to the end, despite trying to give them the slip. And something would have gone down in the final moments, and he would have just, like, disappeared into the smoke, right? Instead of what happened, which is just a very gruesome, he's not just a little dead, he's real dead. not even close to the end of the movie. Which I found to be very satisfying, and I didn't even mind that he was creeped out by the tiger immediately.
And
kept talking about how much he didn't like it.
Crosses the line. Well, that was funny.
They've crossed the line. That was a funny line.
That was funny.
Donovan, you have thoughts about the zombie-fied animals?
Am I meant to understand that? So the zombie could ride the horse. Yeah. Did he have to re-domesticate the horse after its undeath? Or am I supposed to believe that this horse, while now craving human flesh, remembers perfectly everything about how you get it one way or the other? You don't get it both.
Well, same thing with the tiger. Did the tiger just acted like a tiger?
Well, the tiger craves human flesh, but that's what tigers do anyway, so it's not a really big...
What difference did that tiger... What was the difference between that tiger being a zombie and a tiger just set loose in Las Vegas without much of a crowd around? You know,
honestly, I think the regular tiger will leave you alone more than the zombie tiger.
Okay, that's fair.
So I had some more questions too. Am I meant to understand that they can carry on their backs enough gasoline to power up an entire casino's backup generator?
Yes.
For an hour and a helicopter?
Yes, you are.
What is that, rocket fuel?
Could
yeah,
be.
Probably. Probably.
It's just that pilot coffee pouring it in.
I do think that the movie's biggest flaw was the lady with the kids in the camp at the beginning of the movie.
Oh,
I think
her name Gita.
Was Gita. She was solely a plot point. And that, you know, that for Kate to leave her dad and have a reason to go rescue, it was just...
Mm-hmm. It made it feel weird, dumb, and unfocused. And you know, when you said it was a plot point, there's no point where they cut over to Kate where you were like, I wonder what's going to happen here. You knew it was going to... Everything uh-huh. It was very, uh-huh. you know, I could have written this, you know, if I closed my eyes and guessed what happened at a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
Which was too bad because some of the heist stuff, you know, the at least for the set pieces and like what are, you know, the stuff they're doing there, you're kind of like, okay, I know that, I know the broad outlines of this, but what's going to happen next, right? What's going to happen uh-huh. in this scene?
Yeah. So yeah, he, you know, Snyder did some good things and did some bad things. That's a perfectly normal Zack Snyder movie, I think. That's outside of the DC universe. When they dropped the container on the kid who was hugging her mom in the montage, I thought, whoa, here we go.
Yeah.
This might be something different. And it was a little, and then it wasn't. So
that the opening montage was a great mashup of, like, there were funny zombie mm-hmm. moments in it, mm-hmm. but then also just, there were somewhere it's like a flex of like, yeah, we're going to use this saw to cut these yeah. bodies open and... The blood is getting on the camera, you know, like that
yeah,
whole effect.
Yeah, of course.
But then there were also heartbreaking moments, like you're talking about, that
yeah,
were...
Yeah.
That was... Donovan, you mentioned music videos. Like, that was basically a zombie music video.
Yeah.
And it was great.
It was his best moment.
Yeah.
I wonder if Zach... This is going to sound like I'm being an asshole, but I don't mean it that way. I wonder if he's ever thought about directing video games, because I wonder if his...
This felt like a video game.
I wonder if his sensibilities would mesh with a different kind of art or media or whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm. It's really funny how a lot of times I separate the artist from the art. But, you know, finding out that Josh Whedon was a huge asshole and Zack Snyder is actually a really nice guy, or probably a nice guy, that's kind of colored the way I take in Zack Snyder movies. So I really wish I could have seen this on the big screen and that it was solely a theatrical release, no pandemic and all that.
This would have been a great, like, popcorn and,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, it really
popcorn
would.
And air conditioning movie, I think so.
Which is exactly what we're about to get into after the break. We're going to talk about a couple of... I think each of us brought a movie to the table, so we'll talk about our upcoming summer movies, okay? Let's take a break. Folks, thanks very much for listening. If you would, rate us on your podcast app and add a one-sentence review or something. That helps, I think. Share us with a friend. That'll help, too. So if you like us, let someone else know that we exist. On the Alabama Take, the website... We have plenty more. There's writings on pop culture and a bit beyond. And then, of course, we still have the weekly YouTube short talk show, which is called Short Takes, very aptly called. You can subscribe to our YouTube channel for that or check our website every Friday for new episodes. This week, I'm going to return to the Drive-By Truckers, and I'm going to talk to studio owner and Dexatine and model citizen Matt Patton. That's coming this Friday. If you wish to help with the site and website expenses and podcast hosting costs, feel free to click on donate or shop, and you can either donate in various ways or you can buy something from our shop. That helps too. Plenty to choose from if you wish. We will get back into taking it down this week. Before we wrap up everything Mayor of Easttown related, we are going to talk summer movies. And maybe you brought one or two movies you're excited to see. Well, but before we do that, what do you guys think about summer movies? And I'm not trying to be asinine here, but just like, what's your perception of them in general or in years past? And I'll start maybe so I can you can get a grip on what I'm asking. I just think these last, let's take last year out of the picture because obviously, right? But let's just say 2021 and 2019 and even a little 2018, I feel like it's just been low output for me. Like, I like it when there's like two, maybe three, like good movies released every weekend during the summer. Like, that's what I want. Like, challenge me to pick one rather than looking at the lineup and going, oh shit, I'm not going to go to the movies this week. You know?
Yeah, last couple of years, there's been two, maybe three, like, we have to make this movie so our copyright doesn't expire.
Yeah.
Kind of movies.
That stinks.
But the platonic ideal of the summer movie is great.
Adam, you have a history with summer movies. Is that your bag?
I mean, outside of, like, probably everybody else's, of being off school and, mm-hmm. you know, like, going in the afternoon to see a movie or something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't, outside of like being just young enough to be really excited when the first Star Wars came out, like I have very few like marquee summer films. You know what I mean? It was always, I mean, I'm mm-hmm. I understand that it's either a summer film or a Christmas movie. Like those are kind of the, you know, like yeah. the, because Lord of the Rings came out when I was like the
those
prime
the
age to be
yeah.
obsessed with it. And it was every Christmas for 3 years. And that was great. But, you know, now, as especially given the spending my last few years on tour a bunch and then coming home, and summer's usually really busy, going to see something on, like, a Tuesday at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, it's tough to beat that for a movie-going experience. Mm-hmm. I love it.
There's also, in terms of time, there's a flip to that. I can remember being in college and summer schedule being much less stressful, and going to see Talladega Nights at a midnight release for
yeah.
no reason other than I was up at midnight and it was summer.
I mean, we used to go to see movies at midnight or 11 or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
They were still
yeah.
doing the midnight release. I mean, like a lot of the Harry Potters were that way. I remember going to see some Batmans that way. Yeah, that's uh-huh. always a fun time.
There's so much of my life that is connected to a semi-tradition and a nostalgia point that, and it just connects to happiness. So summer movies kind of do that for me. Of late, though, I gripe that everyone besides me thinks of August as a summer movie season. And it is, of course, but that just depresses me because I'm back in work mode in August. So I just like, they count movies being released in August as summer movies. And I'm like, oh, I might not see that one.
It's kind of moved forward a little bit, too, where you get more. It feels like you get more in May than you used to.
Which I'm okay with that because I'm kind of winding down.
Oh,
work,
you're okay.
I can kind of be more lax on what I'm doing.
I feel like we're in the prime time right now for a big marquee movie, like Memorial Day and the weeks immediately afterward. That's a
but
great
we
time.
We haven't gotten one, really.
Yeah, I know.
It sucks. But what's the one movie that's going to get you back in the theater after you're, now that we're all vaxxed, or just you see on the horizon and you are excited about? Adam, let's start with you.
It'll be tempting to go see, is Black Widow the first Marvel that's coming out?
July 9th, I think.
Yeah.
That'll be pretty tempting. That'll be pretty tempting.
For sure.
I mean, just because I know that the quality of product is going to be enough to be worth going to see in that environment. And it would be a fun return to the theater. Haven't been to a theater in, well, a year and a half. But the one that I am genuinely excited mm-hmm. about is definitely the A24 Dev Patel starring film, The Green Knight. I don't know if that Our theater does a decent job of getting A24 stuff just because it's been, those movies were so big, or a few of their Midsummer and that kind of world were so big. They do a decent job. I don't know if this one will be here or not. I would love to see it
on the big screen. That one seems like it's going to get a wide release. Now, yesterday, you sent me a text that said the Green Knight was definitely your bag. What about that movie? Looks like it is made for Adam.
It just seems like it's, you know, old English stuff. I love an old green landscape, England, what's going on with these creepy old, you know, mythological kind of stuff, but unsettling in a way. I don't know. There's a whole, you know, not like, I don't know. I'm kind of struggling to put it into words. Like,
it's like, give me some highbrow folk horror. Let's go.
Exactly. I love a good creepy folklore story.
It's kind of scratching that Lord of the Rings itch for you.
Well, a little bit, but also thinking about, you know, I think in a way Midsummer did that in a modern sense. Wicker Man does kind of the same thing.
There's a Wicker Man itch there that everyone has to scratch.
Yeah, anything that's just kind of like old and unsettling like that. Like Donovan, if Alan Garner has anything to, not that he has anything to do with this film, but there's a whole string of stuff that definitely is, as I told you yesterday, my shit.
There you go. Donovan, what movie is on the horizon that might get you in the theater?
I'm going to pretty much second Adam with this. Black Widow and the Green Knight are probably the two most likely candidates. Because, you know, we're like a lot of things that I think were originally spring, summer, and fall movies or big tentpole ones for next year have the... They're kind of still delayed until the fall, right?
Yes.
So, like, No Time to Die is going to be October. The new Wes Anderson movie, I think, is also October. Dune is maybe November. Mm-hmm. There's another one I thought of, but I can't remember what it is off the top of my head now.
The Eternals is probably one that got pushed back a little.
I think The Eternals is probably, like, the number one blockbuster that I'm ready to see.
I think Dune for me, but it's not till October. Like, if Dune came out today, I'd drive to the theater right now.
But, I know what it was. Edgar Wright has a new movie coming out. That got pushed back. Last Night in Soho. I really liked the last one he did, Baby Driver, so I'm hoping this one will be good. So, yeah, I think Black Widow is going to be hopefully kind of a getting-the-gang-all-back-together experience. Doesn't have to be the best thing, just so long as we're having fun.
There you go.
I hope The Green Knight is good. I know this is controversial on this show, but the Suicide Squad, not Suicide Squad. I'll look for the reviews on that. The last one was god awful. This one could, I don't know. James Gunn made several movies I found reasonably entertaining. They have some of the dumber heroes, which I think is, that's Suicide Squad is a great chance to bring out the stupid heroes and villains, like the ones that really don't make any sense.
Gotcha.
What else are you doing with them?
You guys have touched on all mine. I pretty much guarantee y'all see The Green Knight and Black Widow in the theater, but I'll bring up one that's also got my interest and I might see if I have the time, which is the new M. Night Shyamalan movie, Old. It's likely based on a particular short story, which is slipping my mind, but it's about when guests go to a beach, they come back aged a lot or something. And I don't know. I know a lot of people shit on him, but I still like him. I think he still makes interesting work. And if his most recent stuff has been on Apple Plus with the show Surf It, and that's been really, really good. So I like him. I'll go see it.
I'd give that a whirl.
Yeah, sure. It's I also had on my list here that what are some that you glanced over and you just absolutely don't care about? And mine was the Suicide Squad. I don't know. They've just lost so much goodwill with me, some of those DC stuff. So I'm out. And y'all got any that you saw and you thought, nope, not why, you know, why would I watch that?
The latest Hotel Transylvania release. Doesn't even have Adam Sandler in it. Why would I bother? I found this all out from a paragraph on Time, so it was a real roller coaster for me.
I think the first thing on that Time article that we all used kind of as a guide for this was like a Saw-related product. And I was like, who's excited?
Which is already out.
Yeah, you know, I can finally go to the theater again. I'm going to go see a Saw. I guess there's people who, they keep making them.
There's got to be, yeah.
There has to be some audience. No thanks.
Well, guys, I don't think I have to set up any spoiler stuff here, because surely everyone's watched the Mayor of Easttown finale. It ended recently, and with it, here comes our final discussion. We covered the show pretty much week to week all the way through, and if you haven't watched any of it at the finale, we are plowing ahead with everything from the show, so if you're behind. But this may be a wrong, quote-unquote wrong, way of looking at a series, but I tend to take the final scene of a show entire, or the final few scenes of an entire show, and I'm assuming that this show is only one season long. And I use that final scene or couple of scenes to determine what the show is wanting to say as a whole. It's a bit like analyzing a book, where you take the final couple of sentences and you take the opening couple of sentences and you kind of judge what came between. I like to do that. It's just the English it's the English school guy in me. So, but this show perfectly nailed what it was actually saying, which is it really wasn't about murder mysteries, although it was, you know, as much as we wanted it to be, but it's much more about how we will fight tooth and nail to protect our children, our families. And man, that final scene, I still think about it. It's been a few weeks. I'm still thinking about it. So, Adam, what were your thoughts on the entire season of Mayor of Easttown, or just the finale itself?
I think that this is, I feel that we've talked about this, and I know I've talked about it with friends off mic. If there has been a spiritual successor to the first season of True Detective, I think this is it. I think it was super strong throughout. I think it landed the plane better than a lot of shows do. I think it didn't try to do too much in the last episode. And it, you know, we've talked all along about how red herrings would pop up and then be resolved fairly quickly. The drama, all of the shootouts, all of the guns all of that was out of the way by a third of the way into this last episode.
Absolutely.
And it was just information reveals, and it everything even felt tidy before it was. You know, there was the lingering question of who really did this, but. I thought it was great, and especially to deal with something as nuanced as what Mara was going through with her son's suicide, and then obviously all of the. It's really about, you know, you said protecting family. It's about women protecting their family and the lengths that they'll go
there
to.
You go. There you go. Thank you for.
I mean, it's about both, because obviously the men are involved, and you know, people go to jail who are trying to take falls for each other. The men are doing that, but the women are kind of behind the scenes pulling the strings. All that to say, it could have been, you know, if you say Kate Winslet plays a detective whose son committed suicide in their attic, and at the end of it she climbs into the attic and the screen goes black, like that could be good or bad. It's all about how you get there, and I thought that it was totally earned by the end, and was a very. I've seen people online saying, "Bring us a season two. We want a season two." I would watch it for sure, but because there's such great characters, but I don't think that there should be. It was a great final image.
Yeah,
Donovan, what did you think of the show as a whole in the finale?
Thumbs up. You know, for every show, there's always a couple. Like little things, like I think there was one twist or subplot too many for me. But as a whole, I actually found myself kind of watching it and thinking, like, could you make this show without the murder? Because and by that I mean the murder is really not the heart of it. It's Kate Winslet just does such a great job of showing Mare's strength and vulnerability, and especially in these last couple episodes, the bit where she lets her brittleness, her pain, kind of crack, and another mayor is there too. The other mayor, who is the same mayor, is also there. That final shot, it's probably the most earned shot in the series. It's really great. I mean, I thought just even stuff with like her going and talking to her grief counselor and stuff. Mm-hmm. They caught something really. I feel like she did something really interesting, and I don't know, important there. Just with the way she portrayed someone trying to navigate in the fog of grieving, yeah, and change, and et cetera, et cetera.
Moving onward and upward in a literal sense with that final scene. Mm-hmm. I just loved that. Did they drop the ball on anything, in your opinion? I believe that the only element that could have been done but didn't was that I think maybe in the final scene or just before, they should have brought back Detective Goodboy. He should have said, "I didn't die. You guys thought I've been laying in that old bar for a while."
Had to heal up on his own. I think the only, in the same token, there was a scene where a dog was carrying a grocery bag. Did y'all catch this? It was very brief.
No, that's not real.
It was one of the atmospheric scenes that we've praised so much. And a dog is.
Wanted to know what was going on.
I'm sure that they were shooting around town, gathering all those shots, and the camera guy was like, "Holy shit, are you seeing this?" And they filmed it because it looks very much
like. I do not
like,
remember this.
Like the owner has sent the dog to the Wawa, and it's bringing back, you know, lunch or something like that. I want to know what was up there.
That is funny. That'll be season two.
Yeah.
I hope so. That's just going to follow the dog story.
I do have a genuine gripe about the treatment of Lori. I think her, you know, she was involved in covering up a crime in a pretty profound way and now has custody of this love child that she probably does not feel that fondly for, and like how is she not in jail, or how is the situation just kind of like chilling?
Right, she's got to be accessory after the fact, right?
You would think so,
at the very least.
You would think so.
I did kind of feel like Dylan's story, not the I like the resolution, but Dylan's bit, like what's he up to, what's he doing, really kind of fizzled out. That was probably the only one that they really kind of built it up more than it was. But, you know, these are a little, you're throwing stones at the moon. It was great.
Yeah, I think the Dylan's thing felt unearned only in that scene where he chases the friend down, Aaron's friend, whose name is slipping my mind right now, with the gun.
That was the point. Yeah, that was the point where they kind of built him up a little too much. Mm-hmm. They should have put the brakes on that.
There wasn't really anything going on there, and they kind of quickly lost interest in it.
They burned the journals so that, you know, that was, people said, like, that's an unresolved plot point. It seemed like they burned them because he wanted his parents to keep custody.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He was trying
I think so. It was a little...
But it didn't shaky. It didn't seem like something that you would need to wave a gun around to keep covered up.
I thought they burned the journals because he was afraid there might be something that would point to him being the killer, even though he knew he wasn't, obviously. But he was just like, "I don't want to go to jail. There's something in here that's going to make me look like they're going to try to pin it on me even more."
Could be. I just...
Just to be safe.
Yeah, know? Just destroy all evidence. But I also think that, you know, like Aaron made sure... Or she assessed, we talked very early on about how Dylan's parents, he's clearly revolting against like an actual solid upbringing, which flies in the face of everybody else in town, in kind of, you know, broken or problematic family situations. As he develops a fondness for the kid, he realizes that the best place for the kid to be is with his parents, and he's trying to make that happen. That was my takeaway from that.
There wasn't a lot of complaining online, I just from scanning it with a cursory glance, but the very little whining I saw was they didn't think that Ryan, the boy, being the killer was quite fair. I thought it was. Do y'all have comments on that?
I never see it coming anyway.
No, I don't try to figure it out a lot other than just maybe talking to my wife and making some guesses. I don't sit and try to study evidence. You know, I don't watch a show like a detective.
Mm-hmm.
That I think that's boring. But when Ryan was revealed as the killer, I thought all the motivations lined up. And I thought, yeah, okay, that's fine. That works for me. Did it work for you?
Reddit got it right. There's a lot of people chattering about that.
I mean, if you guess every single character, segment of you are gonna get.
When you
right,
have a million people commenting, somebody's gonna get it right.
When we discussed the scene when Ryan's dad is moving out of the house because he has supposedly been cheating again, and he says, "Don't worry, I'm gonna make everything right," or whatever he says,
"I'm gonna fix it.
I'm gonna fix it." We didn't talk. We talked at the time that that was the language that he used did not sound like someone who's trying to put a family back together after a cheating situation. It sounded like something more significant. So there were breadcrumbs along the way, I guess. And that scene was really the first one where we saw the lengths that that family would go to cover up. I did think it was a bold choice, just like if you're a director or a writer, to have this great ensemble cast and Kate Winslet just killing it all along, and to put the most dramatic moments in the hands of a child actor. You know, the retelling of that, I thought, well, this kid's pretty good, not like burning it up or anything, but it was a choice for sure to give that much of your finale time to, you know, when you have these absolute masterful professionals working. Interesting choice.
Yeah, that actor and the character really garnered some pity from me, despite being a killer when he ran to his mom. It's kind of sad.
I think Mare's reaction to that was made it pitiable too, right? Because she's like, "I don't want it." You can tell she don't want to do it,
right?
But she's gentle
with his arrest and everything.
It was rough.
And she puts him in the car and says, "Once you get settled, they'll let you call your mom." It's like, man, this is awful. Awful.
Yeah, it is, all the way around. All right. Great show. We'll see where it lands in our end of year lists. That's it for this week. Next week, we're going to talk about the movie, The Personal History of David Copperfield, to get a little, Dev under our belt before The Green Knight. That's now streaming on HBO Max if you want to watch beforehand. I think we'll probably touch on Loki. I bet we can get Natalie to chime in for us.
She's already threatened. She's threatened what might happen if she's not on for Loki next week.
Hey, we love to have Natalie on. We might give some final thoughts on the Underground Railroad. We might talk Sweet Tooth. I don't know. We got some things up in the air. If you have comments, let us know. Find us on social media. Follow us. And a lot more on all that stuff next week. Talk to you all then.